charge to a point outside the holocam's line of sight. Then he let it return to normal operation. He trotted down the corridor to the left, brushing his fingers across each door as he passed, fuzzing each security holocam as it came within its range of vision. What he found curious was that the prison was not being flooded by false Jedi. Any force that could infiltrate and replace the Jedi could do so more readily with the government's cooperation, which meant that the government and the Jedi should be hand in hand, which in turn would make it easy for them to send an army of false Jedi down here after him. But only the fake Tahiri had come. Why? Had the government somehow held out against the imposters? He felt a stirring of hope. On the other hand, perhaps there were two or more groups of imposters at work, groups that did not cooperate. The Jedi could have been infiltrated by one, the government by another. That would make sense of what was happening here. He felt a pulse in the Force as he neared one oversized door. Yes. Valen, however diminished, was beyond it. He got to work on the door security. But the security panel was new and of a very sophisticated type, obviously installed because of the important nature of the captive beyond. Seth ignited his lightsaber and plunged it into the Durasteel door. In less than a minute, for it was not as formidable as a blast door, he cut a large gap into it. Down the corridor, the turbolift door slid open. The false Tahiri stepped through. Her hood concealed her features. She carried no lightsaber. She spotted Seth, but instead of rushing toward him, she turned to stare up at the holocam monitoring the turbolift. She began jumping up and down, waving at it. Seth sighed. Now she was using the prison's resources against him. Things would be more difficult. He ducked into the chamber beyond the newly ruined door. It was a storehouse, packed high with old furniture, broken exercise equipment, computers dating back to the Old Republic, and a huge rolling rack from which hung the carbonite prison of Valen Horn. Valen had obviously been bound when frozen. He stood, arms behind him, a statue in mottled gray-black with an expression of pain and outrage on his face, sealed in a rectangular plate. A monitoring panel was embedded along the right rim of the carbonite. Seth moved to it, hurriedly entered a series of commands. The tiny screen read, "Error, enter authorization code." Seth glowered at the apparatus. Now was not the time to face one final layer of security. A strident alarm filled the air. Then Seth's AirSat's Mando opponent squeezed through the hole in the door. Seth moved toward him, reigniting his weapon, and slashed to cut this persistent enemy down. But the man took the blow on one skillfully interposed gauntlet. The blow did not penetrate. It was clear that he was wearing true Mandalorian crushgons made of Beskar. Seth spun, bringing his blade down at the false Mando's shoulder. His target caught the blade on his other gauntlet cuff. Clearly he'd had some training against lightsabers. But Seth maneuvered his hilt up, the blade down, using the gauntlet cuff as a lever point, and the blade slapped against the shoulder, a lighter blow than originally intended. The false Mando's tunic burned away there and caught fire at the edges. As Seth drew back, he could see that the breastplate beneath, too, was Beskar. All right, then. The neck would be his next target. He lunged, arcing his blade in a visually bewildering attack. The lightsaber hilt was yanked out of his hand. It spun through the air, its blade tip glancing off the false Mando's hood and revealing the black metal helmet beneath. And then the hilt landed in the palm of Nott Tahiri, now stepping through the hole in the door. Immediately, she switched the weapon off and then unscrewed the pommel, rendering the weapon temporarily useless. Seth looked at the carbonite imprisoning his colleague.
"Sorry, Valen. Not this time."
"Not ever,"
the false Tahiri said. With a gesture, Seth sent Valen's rack hurtling toward his opponents. Nott Tahiri leapt out of the way. The false Mando, too slow, was hammered by the rack and thrown to one side. As the carbonite reached the door, Seth raised it 2 meters into the air, letting it slap up against the exit. Seth followed, ducking through the hole he'd cut. Then he let the rack fall. It slammed to the floor behind him, momentarily sealing the door. Seth raced down the corridor toward his exit. Ahead, the turbolift door was still open, but he could hear the rushing noise of an oncoming lift car. There was no time to gauge its distance or travel rate. If he was lucky, he'd live and escape. If he was unlucky, he'd die. He heard Balin's carbonite being shoved out of the way as he put on a burst of force-augmented speed and leapt into the turbolift shaft, slamming into the rungs at the back. He didn't grab at them. He dropped. An arriving lift car shuddered to a halt just above his head. He grabbed at rungs a few meters down and held on, listening to the sweet sound of prison guards rushing out of the lift. He smiled. They wouldn't stop a trained Jedi, or even a good imposter like the false Tahiri, but they would slow the false Tahiri and her companion long enough for him to get away. He dropped again, grabbing a new rung 5 meters down, and continued down the shaft.
What's the rush?
Dab rubbed the sleep from his eyes, then cringed as Jaina brought her speeder up to within centimeters of a fast-moving cargo hauler, sideslipped out of her traffic lane and directly in line with oncoming speeders, bypassed the hauler, and whipped back into the proper lane, a handspan in front of the larger vehicle. All around them, other speeders veered and wobbled a bit in nervous anticipation of the next wild maneuver from Jaina's vehicle.
No hurry, Jaina lied. This is just revenge.
Revenge for what?
For waking me up 3 times in the dead of night during the last week for your spot checks. It's my job. I take no pleasure in it. Well, I'm taking pleasure in this.
Jaina sent the speeder rightward into a narrow thoroughfare. She dived, dropping precipitously and illegally through 3 different traffic levels before joining the lane nearest the surface. All around were the lights of pedestrian walkways. In this area, an aging, run-down region where residential edifices gradually gave way to old, poorly maintained government structures, there was little traffic and few pedestrians. To his credit, Dab didn't shriek or grab at his restraining straps. He just shook his head, resigned to the trip.
So, you're going to see Jagged Fell?
Jaina's eyes snapped wide. Having no idea of her true purpose for being here, supporting Jag, Tahiri, and Winter if they absolutely needed her, Dab thought it was a romantic liaison, and he obviously thought that Jaina must be absolutely desperate for it. Infuriated, she tromped on the reverse thrusters, sending herself and Dab slamming forward into their restraints as she made a sharp right-angle turn onto a side throughway. Thrown back into his seat by normal acceleration, Dab rubbed his chest.
Ow! I am not going to see Jag, and that's head of state Fell to you.
Fine.
There's a little rooftop park up here I like.
Of course, at this hour.
Jaina went into a steep climb, going completely vertical as she approached the wall of a particularly large residential block. Out of the corner of her eye, she could see Dab's features drawn back in a rictus brought on by acceleration. Then she reached the top of the building. She rolled until she was level with the rooftop. She immediately set her speeder down on a broad bed of grass. It was indeed a park, with carefully arranged ponds, trees, and flower beds, fully occupying this rooftop and those of several surrounding buildings. Open air, railed turbo lifts provided access between the roofs. Dab breathed a sigh of relief.
I get it. You do?
He nodded.
You come to this rundown neighborhood in the middle of the night, dressed in anonymous brown clothes, and you walk around in the park hoping someone will attack you so you can beat them up. That way you relieve stress and also get to take dangerous criminals in.
She stared at him. It was a brilliant excuse, and she was embarrassed that she hadn't come up with it.
You're absolutely right.
Well, it sounds like a good thing for Jedi to be doing.
It does, doesn't it?
She unstrapped herself and hopped out of the speeder. She gestured toward a spot where the trees were thickest.
I'm going to walk around on the path on the other side of those trees.
He unbuckled his own restraints.
I'll come with you.
No, I'm less likely to be attacked if there are 2 of us.
And I'm more likely to be attacked if there's only 1 of me.
True.
She pointed at a set of bushes away from her trees.
Hide there and wait for me.
She raced off toward her trees. This was not her favorite park, of course. It was the park atop the building where Winter had taken out quarters for the Dark Meld team. From here, she could hear sirens of public safety vehicles far, far below, as they arrived to deal with the crater that had appeared in the plaza minutes before. Past the trees, she found the roof access to the turbolift and rode down to surface level. Seth jumped through the hole he'd cut in the blast door and rolled to his feet in the tunnel beyond. There was the mound of debris his thermal detonator had created, and between him and it were 6 surprised-looking Alliance security troopers. Seth sighed. Of course they'd opened their end of the tunnel to investigate. Of course they'd found their way here. Of course the highest-ranking trooper shouted,
"Halt! Hands in the air!"
Seth raised his hands, the backs of his hands rather than his palms facing the troopers. He made a grasping gesture and yanked. Debris, chunks of metal, and permacrete tore itself from the mound and hurtled toward him. The troopers in the rear, hearing the noise, turned just in time to catch the sideways rain of punishing detritus in their faces and chests. The blocks of masonry and support durasteel knocked them down and kept on coming, catching the three troopers in front by surprise. One inadvertently fired as he was hit, his blast passing Seth a meter away. Seth charged forward, kicking two troopers who were still moving. They lay still. He snatched up the blaster rifle from one and the pistol from another. He made sure both were set to stun. His access hole was not covered by the debris, but the metal patch was back in place over it. Seth reached for it, then hesitated, as a sense of unease passed over him. Again he gestured, this time lofting a big chunk of broken permacrete right into the patch. The impact tore the patch away, folding it around the debris, and there was a crack and sizzle of electricity. A length of electrical cable now dangled in the gap. Seth smiled. He brushed the cable away with a gesture, then leapt through the hole. He didn't need to look around. As he straightened, he aimed the blaster rifle and fired, his stun bolt catching his target before he even registered what it looked like. Another woman, also in close-fitting black garments, a hood concealing her features. She hit the floor with her eyes closed. He took a moment to get his bearings. In the force, he could feel the many life forms out there in the tunnel, and more closing from both sides. There were still more above, and those numbers were growing. He darted for the shaft to the surface, hoping that it had not collapsed.
Chapter 23.
Mirax Horn, piloting a speeder she had stolen mere minutes before from the parking rails outside Kalad's Dream Vacation Hostel, circled a kilometer out from Armand Isard Correctional Facility, catching occasional glimpses of the flashing lights of official vehicles at the scene, of the crater that dominated the little ground-level plaza in front of the prison. Winter hadn't told her much. It was imperative that she help the Jedi. Check. It was related to her son's condition. Check. It was very important that she not be identified. Not just a check, but a guideline she'd followed since she was a teenager. She needed to get near and stand by. Check. All of this was second nature to her. Though she largely operated on the proper side of the law these days, she was a felon's daughter, a smuggler, and a rebel herself. She knew how to acquire material when she needed it, how not to leave forensic or visual evidence. She was happy to do it, too, when she knew why.
Credcoin, this is Slicer. Do you read?
Mirax's new call sign was Credcoin. She frowned at that, wondering if Winter thought she was all about money. The woman had practically raised the three solo children. She must know how positively frantic Mirax was feeling about Valen, both his illness, if that's what it was, and his horrific imprisonment. And who was Slicer? The voice, possibly female, was distorted. Mirax raised her comlink. Slicer, Credcoin, go.
Our target is probably coming out of a worker's access hole right in front of the prison. It is imperative, I say again, imperative that we grab him.
Understood. Mirax angled over to line up on the throughway leading straight to the crater. From this direction, she'd have to come in over the prison, a distinctly illegal approach, and make a steep dive down to surface level. How do I grab him?
No idea. Maybe just harass him. He's armed and very, very dangerous.
Oh, good. Who's my backup?
All of us when we get there.
Who's my backup right now?
No one.
Mirax shut up. She didn't want to ask more questions that yielded bad answers. An Alliance security vehicle rose into her path, broadcasting on all channels for civilian traffic to turn away from this zone. Mirax dipped her speeder and flashed by under it so close that she instinctively ducked. She was pretty sure the pilot got a good look at her, which was another thing that would let him know something wasn't right. She was wearing a sheet of transparasteel foil wrapped around her face, concealing everything but eyes and nose, visually distorting her features. She was over the prison now, spotlights rising to illuminate her, almost blinded her. She could distinctively hear the alarm sounding within the structure. She put the speeder into a dive.
There was the crater, looking much like an asteroid impact site, surrounded by official vehicles. Men and women on the ground were now mostly looking up at her. There was no sign of... No, there he was, a tousle-haired man in a gray worker's jumpsuit, a blaster rifle in his hands, climbing unnoticed from an access hole. Mirax nodded. Her target was in sight. Now how to get him was the question. Best tactic for the moment, buzz him, force him to flee, keep him moving until her backups arrived, and she'd try not to get shot in the meantime. Leveling off just above the surface, ignoring the new spotlights being trained on her from several Alliance security vehicles, she aimed for her target. And then, her head banged against the viewport to her left as she was sideswiped from that side. Startled, suddenly dizzy, she angled off to her right, straight toward a government office building, most of its viewports dark. She vectored hard and found herself roaring along the face of the building at a right angle to the ground, her repulsors barely keeping her from scraping along the building front. Their force blew several viewports completely in. Then she was angling away from the building face and leveling off once more, rubbing her temple. She shook her head and sent the speeder into a tight loop, heading back toward her target. What had happened? Running toward the security cordon around the prison, now packed with pedestrians and press, Jaina saw the whole event unfold. The big civilian speeder, a garish red, so unlikely for a covert operations vehicle, roared toward Seth, who was now out of the access hole. But there was another vehicle, a small, speedy flatbed cargo hauler approaching from the red speeder's port side. The pilot was visible through the front windscreen. Zalash Ku, the bounty hunter, Jaina swore to herself. The cargo hauler sideswiped the speeder, knocking it off course. The hauler continued its sideslip so that it would pass over and to one side of Seth Helen. The Quarren, Didal Niz, leaned over the side of the hauler's bed with his oversized weapon and fired at Seth. Seth sprang to one side with the speed of an experienced Jedi, but the net expanded too wide for him. It wrapped around him as it had Jaina days before. As its connecting cable went taut, the Quarren was nearly pulled over the rail, but he was braced for the impact. Seth was yanked off his feet and hauled into the air behind the vehicle. Jaina grimaced. Seth would be experiencing the same shocks she had. She decided she intensely disliked that Quarren. But the cargo hauler came on straight toward her. The red speeder was getting turned around. Jaina brought out her lightsaber and thumbed on her comlink. Credcoin, Slicer here. Your package is in the net. Follow the package.
Understood.
Even distorted, Mirax's voice sounded irritated. As the cargo hauler passed, not quite overhead, Jaina ignited her lightsaber and hurled it, giving it direction and velocity through the force. Its brilliant blade intersected the metal cable, shearing through it. Jaina positioned herself underneath her plummeting weapon, but transferred her telekinetic effort to Seth, slowing his descent. Slowing his descent some. She didn't know how incapacitated he was by the net's weapon's electrical charges. She let him hit the permacrete fairly hard, and could hear a loud grunt from him as he landed. The cargo hauler sped on, Didal Niz staring down at the two of them in surprise. Then the Quarren turned and began hammering on the back of the pilot's compartment. Jaina caught her lightsaber, switched it off, and raced to stand beside Seth, stepping on and crushing the net's power pack as she did so. Dazed, Seth looked up at her.
Oh, not you too.
Sorry.
She hammered the side of his head with the lightsaber hilt, a crude, inelegant blow, but it had its intended effect. Seth slumped. Mirax's speeder settled beside her. Using the force to augment her strength, Jaina lifted Seth and tossed him into the back seat, then leapt in beside him. Less than 100 meters away, official vehicles around the crater were lifting off. Turning in their direction, Jaina looked at Mirax.
Is this thing fast?
I only steal the best.
Go, go!
They accelerated away from the scene. The security officer standing beside her speeder watched four of her fellow's vehicles take off in pursuit of the red speeder. But she must have felt some presentiment of danger. She turned, grabbing for her blaster pistol, just as Tahiri's open palm strike connected with her chin, bypassing her helmet entirely. The trooper slammed back into the side of her speeder, then slumped to the ground. Behind Tahiri, Jag, with Winter over his shoulder, ducked so the speeder would help conceal him from the gaze of the other security officers. but they were all looking after the fleeing speeder. Over the sound of the alarm and sirens of arriving vehicles, none had heard Tahiri's attack.
I'll drive, Jag said.
I'll drive, Tahiri snapped, sliding into the pilot's seat. You're about as maneuverable as a Nerf in a child's seat with all that on. I doubt you can handle the controls.
I've flown a starfighter in this.
Jag opened the back hatch and carefully slid Winter in, then followed.
Go.
She had the speeder off the ground before he finished his word, and turned on the lights and siren as she joined the chase. Jag managed to get his hatch shut. Mirax glanced at Jaina.
Your slicer?
What else would the Sword of the Jedi do but slice? Jaina gestured at the bounty hunter's vehicle, which had gotten turned around and was headed their way.
Don't give them a clear line of fire at you. There's no telling what the Quarren's weapon can do.
Right. Whether that was a confirmation or an indication of direction, Jaina didn't know. But Mirax abruptly vectored rightward, down a narrow accessway normally used by waste haulers and maintenance workers. It was a surface-level tunnel, opening to the sky each time it came to a thoroughfare. The violence of the maneuver threw Jaina across Seth's body and against the hatch on the left side. Seth remained unconscious. 5 security speeders and the bounty hunter's vehicle followed, the bounty hunter's third in line.
Running out of time!
There was a shrill edge to Tahiri's words.
As soon as they get more pursuit on Jaina, this becomes a chase we can't win.
Hoth is still out, and now we have to yank this vehicle's recorder since you're using real names.
Right. Sorry. If I can get you to the cargo hauler, can you disable it?
Jag straightened up from looking at Winter. He stared over Tahiri's shoulder. They were now halfway along the accessway and accelerating. Their speeder was last in line. And it did not appear that any of the security troopers in the pursuit had realized that the last security vehicle was occupied by hostiles.
I lost my blaster. I have some knockout grenades. No, wait. Get me within reach of the underside.
That was an insane thing to expect of an ordinary pilot, but Jedi tended to be no more ordinary than Jag himself. Tahiri nodded and accelerated. She passed beneath the 4th security speeder so close to the surface that Jag could feel the repulsors pushing off from the permacrete below. He could see debris at road level being kicked up in all directions by their thrust wash. The next speeder forward was too low for such a maneuver, so Tahiri climbed, her vehicles aft grazing the nose of the speeder she'd just passed. She went as high as the tunnel ceiling would allow, climbing over the speeder in front of her. The unexpected repulsor wash kicked that speeder downward and to the left. Jag heard it scrape along the tunnel wall, and then it was behind them, rolling at surface level, sending out showers of sparks. He winced, hoping that the security troopers inside, innocent of wrongdoing in this mess, would be all right. The bounty hunter's vehicle was directly ahead now, and the Quarren in the bed only had eyes for Mirax's speeder. Tahiri dipped again, moving up directly beneath the hauler, rising as close to it as she could against its repulsor thrust. Jag slapped down his helmet's face shield, lowered the transparasteel in his viewport, and reached up for the speeder's underside. Repulsor thrust hammered at his arm, forcing it down. He could overcome that pressure, but still couldn't reach the vehicle's underside. It was centimeters out of his reach. Cursing, he opened his hatch. Gripping the speeder's roof with one crushed gaunt, he half stood, his knees straining as the repulsor thrust from above shoved him down. There was a sudden flash of light as they and the other vehicles of the caravan crossed a thoroughfare, exposing them momentarily to sky and lights from traffic. Then they were in the next tunnel. Jag got his left crush gaunt on machinery in the hauler's underbelly. He exerted himself, and the strength-augmenting servos in the gauntlet squeezed the repulsor nozzles out of recognizable shape. Next, he grabbed the maneuvering thruster vent, destroying it similarly. And then there was the auxiliary energy cell. That actually exploded as he squeezed it, a minor detonation that pelted him with little shards of metal. He felt stings in his neck and upper arms. Then smoke billowed from the area he'd damaged. The cargo hauler slowed, dropping behind Tahiri's speeder. Jag saw the cool woman staring at her control console and pounding on the yoke. Then she looked up and caught sight of him. Had he been another man, he would have offered her some flippant gesture, but he was Jagged Fell, known among pilots and Jedi everywhere as the most humorless. Come to think of it, he wasn't Jag Fell right now. He was a mystery man, and needed for his role in this affair never to be associated with Jagfell. So he blew a kiss to Zalash Ku before resuming his seat and slamming the hatch shut. Ku's vehicle dropped farther behind until it was lost in the distance. Mirax had to shout for Jaina to hear her.
Two pursuers down! The next to last one is ours, Jaina shouted back. Tahiri and Jag are in it.
She got back to work, bringing out the sedative pack that all the Darkmeld conspirators on this mission were carrying. She injected Seth with its contents. This was slow work. Mirax's aerobatics with the speeder made even the simplest medical procedure next to impossible. Finally, it was done. Making sure her garment hood was up, concealing her features, she turned away from Seth and back toward the pursuers. Even for an experienced Jedi Knight, it took concentration to lift a speeder telekinetically, especially when its rapid movements made it a difficult target. But she found it, grasped it, and shoved it sideways, gently but irresistibly. Its right side ground into the tunnel wall, abrading the metal there, filling the vehicle's main compartment with sparks and smoke. Suddenly, the pilot was decelerating, descending, in a frantic effort to retain control of his vehicle. She did the same with the next vehicle, and then, as Tahiri closed, with the last vehicle in the caravan. Suddenly, there was no enemy pursuit. Tahiri switched her lights and siren off. Jaina, more familiar with Coruscant than most of the others, navigated, guiding Mirax to a shadowy nook off a major thoroughfare. The two speeders settled there in the darkness. Jag took a moment to yank the security speeder's recording device and crush it beyond any possible retrieval of data. Then the five conspirators gathered. Winter, though groggy, her reflexes shot, was at least awake again.
All right.
Jaina looked at each of the others. Confused but resolute, Mirax. Sweaty but confident, Jag. Relieved, Tahiri. Pale but smiling, Winter.
We're almost done. Mirax, you'll come with me. We need to steal another speeder, then pick up the rest. Then you'll drop me on a specific rooftop not far from where all this mess took place. Jag, do you need to get back to the Imperial Remnant Embassy?
Galactic Empire, and yes.
All right, drop Jag off near there. Then, Tahiri, I need you to guide Mirax to the Master's speeder hangar access at the temple. Tekli will get you in.
When Jaina and Mirax were gone, Winter removed forensic evidence from the security speeder and Mirax's stolen red vehicle. Jag pulled off all his armor, dressing once more in the now ridiculously large black tunic. After Jaina and Mirax returned with the new acquisition, a sturdy yellow hardtop speeder with enough room for two adults, eight younglings, and a Wookiee, Jag stored his armor in its cargo compartment, along with the Quarren's net and incriminating items of clothing. Stripped of armor, he once again became a well-muscled man of normal size. Jaina gave him one last worried look.
Not too many non-Mandos have Beskar breastplates and crush gaunts. The fact that you do isn't well known, but...
He put a finger on her lips to shush her.
There's nothing to worry about. I have an alibi. Like all sensible heads of state, I have a double, hard at work pretending to be me back in my quarters.
She moved his finger aside.
My mother didn't use a double.
Well, she was clearly crazy.
That drew a short laugh from Winter. The others looked at her. Winter indicated herself, Jaina, and Jag.
That sounds like a toast for all our families. Here's to crazy women, and the pilots who pursue them.
Jag raised an imaginary glass in her direction.
Chapter 24. Caverns of the Hidden One, Doran.
Ben wasn't glassy-eyed, but he wanted to be. Hours of using pickaxes to hack away at living rock had tired and infuriated him. In theory, he and Luke were doing this to carve out their permanent quarters in the residential gallery, a process that would take years. In truth, Ben knew they wouldn't be here anywhere near that long, which meant that every blow with the pickaxe was a wasted one. But now, work done for the day, after a Sanus team, dressed in fresh clothes, even if they were the horribly dull robes worn by everyone in these caverns, Ben felt a little better as he and his father walked to their audience with the Hidden One. Ben glanced at his father.
So, what's your strategy?
Luke frowned, puzzled.
Strategy?
To convince him to let us out of this hole.
Ben, what's our objective here?
To get out.
The objective that brought us to Doran in the first place.
Oh. to find out about Jason.
If we were to march in there and demand our release, and he agreed and somehow magically transported us to the surface, we would have failed in achieving that objective.
Well, yeah. Ultimately, it's the more important one.
Ultimately, yes. But since we're under no time pressure, let's handle things in a logical order. Ben let out a sigh.
They left the main corridor and entered the communal dining hall, which was all but empty at this midpoint hour between afternoon and evening servings. It was not that large a chamber. There were fewer than 50 Keldors in these caverns, and the hall could accommodate all of them. Tables and benches, meticulously cut out of stone and sanded into straight, clean lines, were arrayed into neat ranks for the diners, flanked by matched stone benches. The Hidden One sat alone at the nearest table. He nodded at the Skywalkers as they entered. The informality bothered Ben. The Hidden One was effectively a king, though his kingdom was tiny, and yet he was not accompanied by advisors for an important meeting with a fellow master.
Luke seated himself opposite the Hidden One.
Thank you for seeing us.
Ben slid into place beside his father.
The Hidden One offered a toothless smile.
It is no inconvenience. The opportunity to talk with those fresh from the surface world is one of our few pleasures. As I understand it, you wanted to know about Jason Solo.
Yes.
He came here, that is, to the temple in Dorshan, about 9 years ago, very full of life, very sure of himself. He wanted knowledge of the Force, especially as it was understood by those outside his order.
Did you see any sign in him?
Luke paused to consider his phrasing. Of what he was to become?
I think there were scars on his spirit, but they seemed to be well healed. From my many conversations with him, I concluded that his childhood had been an unsettled one, and that he had severed himself from much of it, as though it were dead flesh that needed to be cut away, lest it endanger his life.
He looked at Ben.
You are his cousin, no? Is it the same with you?
Ben shook his head.
You're not going to have a normal childhood in this family, and I guess I have some things in common with Jason. Separated from our parents for long stretches, I was tortured too, but not as long as Jason was.
He saw his father suppress a wince.
I don't know if, when I get to be Jason's age, I'll want to cast my childhood off, but I don't think so. If only because, if he did, he's a bad example to follow.
Interesting,
Luke continued.
And you taught him the lightning rod techniques.
First, I taught him techniques of weather anticipation and the ability to sense energy piling up in the natural world. You can feel heat in the water, in the seas, heat that will become cyclonic storms, for instance. But he heard rumor of the lightning rod techniques and asked about them.
Did he teach you anything?